ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
There was a candle burning and she was sitting with her legs crossed in a state of meditation or rest, and she just said hello and I told her that I loved her album, and that was it. They just pulled me out.
Justine Clarke is a legend. For most of her life, she's been in ours as a child actor who graduated to a lifelong career on the big and small screen, and into an acclaimed theatre actor as well. For the last 20 years, she's probably been entertaining your kids as a regular on Play School, an ARIA-winning singer of many children's albums. I like to sing. But running parallel to all of this has been music. I've been learning by letting go. Way before she stepped into roles on Mad Max, Beyond Thunderdome and Home and Away, music was her lifeblood. So I invited her to Take Five. With our annual Oz Music Month kicking off, I asked Justine to share her Australian songbook. For such a big music fan, I wondered, what guided her choices?
I think I wanted to choose songs and singers, voices, songwriters that have stayed with me throughout my life. Because I think, you know, we're very formed early on, but we can drop away from people and artists that we've liked in our youth. But the ones that I have returned to over and over again in my life and have intersected with in various points in my life as well. But I think they're the voices, they're the Australian voices that I think I'll take through the rest of my life.
Well, you've been such a huge part of the fabric of Australian culture, not just your work on screen, but with the Australian music industry. You know, before you were Justine Clarke, children's entertainer and record maker, you were in like a stack of bands as well, weren't you?
I was. I mean, I never really felt like I was in the music industry in the sense that I never recorded any of the music that I made, but I was very much in the live scene and was around the live scene for, you know, through the 90s. And a lot of very formative parts of my life have been around music, and particularly live music and making music. So yeah.
The whole time you've been acting, and remember, we're going back to, you know, you as a child actor, has music always been the parallel path for you as well? Have you always played while you've been up there on screen and stage?
Yes, I have. Actually, I feel like music has kind of been my driving kind of creative force, actually, from before I was even necessarily acting professionally, which happened from a weirdly very young age. But music has always been kind of my, I don't know, spiritual kind of driver, I think, from when I was a kid. My dad was was the secretary manager of the Redfern RSL, and he ran pubs and clubs and in the 60s, and was around music himself, and used to sing in the house and sometimes sing at the clubs. And so music was in the house from a very young age. My mother, he met my mum, she was a Tivoli dancer, and she would do the club circuit as well. And she would do the ballet before the main act would come on, and that's how they met. So we had a sort of a collection of, you know, ballet records and instrumental records that she would have used as inspiration and as backing music for her dancers, and then just a lot of Frank Sinatra. Come fly with me, let's fly away. So music was sort of fundamental to me. It wasn't until I was about sort of 16 that I started to play music, you know, I was playing it in at dancing school and, you know, singing at dancing school, but in terms of sort of working in a club or in a bar or a restaurant, it wasn't until I was about 17, I think.
It just seems so inevitable that you would go to the path that you have, given that your parents were those people.
I know. It's weird, isn't it? I think now at my age, I think back and I just think, well, of course, that is what would happen. But I also do look back on, and, you know, having done this process, gone through these kind of periods of my life and these specific Australian voices, I have really kind of thought and reflected that music has meant so much to me and has got me into and out of a lot of trouble.
Your first choice is from a jazz legend, Vince Jones.
Yes.
Why did you choose Jettison?
I chose Jettison because I think it's one of his best original songs. You know, Vince has also covered an extraordinary kind of selection of the American Songbook, and he does amazing interpretations of those, and I absolutely adore those. And that's actually how I came to him, was probably through listening to covers. But it's his original music that really stays with me.
Dressed up for Sunday, although it's Monday.
And I think it is because it's him, it's his voice. He's a Wollongong boy. He's incredibly passionate about the environment. He's political, he's poetic, and he's an extraordinary singer and musician. And yeah, this song, like all the songs, I think touches me in at that place where I love a song that makes you choke a little bit, you know, and all of these singers do that to me in some way. They touch my heart.
It begins quite stripped back and then it builds really delicately. It's almost like it's kind of a nice blueprint for what he does, because you can hear all the elements of what he's so good at. Obviously, the trumpet comes in later in the song, but the way that it builds is so subtle, and then it's almost like it's, you know, swelling with emotion the further and further you get into the song, right?
And a call to arms, I think, too, that sort of trumpet line at the beginning and the sort of march of the snare, and then this beautiful line, don't jettison everything, right side or the left, you worry me to death. Don't jettison everything.
Don't jettison everything, right side or the left, you worry me to death. Don't jettison everything.
I think is just a beautiful meditation on not denying things, remaining open.
Voice on the air, words are floating. She thinks of her face while children are starving. Resistance will win, will do in every way. Don't jettison everything, right side or the left, you worry me to death. Don't jettison everything.
You've also sung in jazz bands, haven't you? Like, you've kind of gotten out into the cabaret scene and jazz scene before.
I have. I actually had a chance meeting with Vince. I went to a lot of his gigs in my late teens, and I met him when I was in Melbourne, and he ended up at my boyfriend's father ran a restaurant and I worked there, and he ended up there one night, and we were playing the piano and we sang, I got to sing Bye Bye Blackbird with him, and he said, you got a really good voice, you know, you've got it, you should keep singing. And I just took that to my heart, and I got a little speaker and a microphone, and I put it downstairs in the storeroom at this my boyfriend's father's restaurant, and I would just sing into this microphone, because he said, you got to get mic technique, it's really important. And that was when I was like 21, and at about age 27, I got a phone call out of the blue from Jonathan Schwartz, who is a legendary, you know, bass player, musician, composer in Sydney, and they were running a jazz club called the Starfish Club, which actually still runs now. It's actually the most extraordinary gig, once a month on a Monday. And he said, hey, Vinnie Jones said you can sing. Do you want to come down and sing with us? So my first, you know, real jazz gig was at the North Bondi surf club on the top floor, and you got to sing six songs. You chose them, and you went to a rehearsal that day, and met all the band that day. And you were on that night. And since then, I've always returned to it when I can, and tried to perform as much as I can with those guys.
What an incredible person to have in your corner as an early mentor.
Oh my gosh, he really was. I still chat with Vince when I can, and he's down the coast. Sometimes I visit him down there, and I really treasure my friendship with him.
I love that. Your next choice is from an icon of Australian song, Paul Kelly. Before we get to which one, though, I have to ask you about your recent starring role in one of his latest video clips as Rita in Rita Wrote a Letter, which is, first of all, you know, when you no one sees a 30-year sequel in the making coming with a new Paul Kelly record, but there it is, and all of a sudden you're inhabiting this role in the song. What was it like when you got that email or that call saying, oh, PK wants you to play Rita in the music video?
I may have screamed. I think I stood up in front of my two sons and my husband and said, I'm going to be Rita! Like, I think I screamed.
Role like that, because Rita is, you know, obviously there was How to Make Gravy the film,
yes,
but she is such a huge figure in everyone's lives as a song that's one of the most loved Paul Kelly songs of all time. What do you bring to her when you're playing her on screen?
Wow, well, I mean, it's a visual story, is the story that I'm telling. It's helping to realize the vision of the director. And so I really tried to put myself in that particular scenario of a woman who was wanting to say all that she needed to say to someone who she really loved, but she knew it was a relationship that could never be, but she would always be connected to him. And I think, you know, at my age, I can absolutely relate to that. So you put yourself in it as much as you can, and there's too much history, I suppose, from everybody and too many people's personal responses to the song to try and encompass everything. You have to make it yours.
Yeah, especially in a 3.5-minute song or whatever as well.
Yeah. And the music was very evocative. It was very easy to do that. You know, I think I've done that all my life, is put music on and dreamed scenarios.
Yeah. Well, the song you've chosen for your take five actually turns 40 this year. It's another much-loved classic from Post, Paul Kelly's From St Kilda to King's Cross. Why does this make your Australian songbook?
Oh, it just reminds me of a time when I was living between Sydney and Melbourne and getting the bus a lot. And it really, in terms of placing you somewhere that will never leave you, I suppose. It does that for me whenever I hear it.
From St Kilda to King's Cross, it's 13 hours on a bus. I press my face against the glass and watch the white lines rushing past.
I discovered Paul Kelly really actually through Mary Jo Starr. Back in the day, she was a persona that was created by Karen Fairfax. And Paul Kelly had written most of the songs on the album. There were a few covers as well. And it was one of my favourite albums. The first band I was in was called the Honky Tonk Angels, and formed with my friend Loene Carman, who we sort of met each other through a shared love of Loretta Lynn. And I discovered Mary Jo Starr and loved her, and then found these songs that were actually Paul Kelly songs, and that's how I found him. And then for the next, he kind of taught me how to play the guitar again. I'd learned as a kid, but then I took it up again because his songs are so simple, so beautiful, easy to play. And so I've been singing Paul Kelly songs to my bedroom wall since I was 18 years old. And his voice, his music, his lyrics, his storytelling will just remain in my soul. And I think so many people would feel the same. But this song, I don't know, you know, catching a bus is really, it's a very solitary, melancholy place to be in the most wonderful way, and I think he captures that beautifully. And I've always had a relationship to Sydney and Melbourne, and always felt quite torn about which place I felt more at home in and which one kind of fully expressed my love for, you know, this country and, yeah, where I felt I belonged. And this song makes me, allows me to not have to choose.
Have you ever seen King's Cross when the rain is falling soft? I came in on the evening bus from Oxford Street, I cut across. And if the rain don't fall too hard, everything shines just like a postcard. Everything goes on just the same. Fair weather friends are the hungriest friends. I keep my mouth well shut, I cross with open hands.
I just heard him play it live and it was, it does the same thing to me every time. Again, it, a good song will, I think it feels really personal somehow, but it's also, it also feels like you're not alone.
Mm.
And I think he can, he just, he does that so beautifully. And I, he played, yeah, I heard him play it in Brisbane a few, about a month ago, and it just, yeah, does the same thing every time.
His voice sounded extraordinary at those shows too.
Oh my God, yes.
Just doing these, like, it was amazing because, you know, I've seen him so many times, but watching him do his first ever arena tour.
Yeah.
And his voice, he's 70 years old. He's released 30 records.
Yeah.
And his voice was just crystal clear and it was just as essential as ever. It was so special being at those shows.
Yeah, it was. It was pure, wasn't it? It's very strong too. It's like it's getting stronger.
He also popped up a few years ago in a great two-part series that you hosted called Going Country.
Yes.
What did that experience teach you about Australian songwriting and storytelling? Because country is huge in this nation and obviously has its very different way of telling stories.
It's massive. We're the third largest market of country music consumers in the world, I believe.
Mm.
And I just didn't even really, I didn't really understand that. What was the most extraordinary thing about that was hearing incredible artists sing right in front of me. I mean, that was the most extraordinary privilege, to hear Emily Wadamara singing right next to me, to hear Casey Chambers' voice. You know, I was sitting on a log in her backyard and she was singing out to me. You know, to hear Paul Kelly and that band, you know, right in their rehearsal room. I mean, Troy Cassidaly, Briggs, like it was just... You understand when you're that close the power of the sort of, it's like they're a medium and things flow through them, those artists. And that to me just cemented how important Australian artists are to this country and Australian music is to this country.
You mentioned before as well that you've always felt that pull between Sydney and Melbourne, two of the biggest cities in Australia.
Mm.
But did that experience of going on the road give you a new viewpoint, a new perspective on, you know, regional Australia and getting out, and what was the stories that were being told outside of the big cities?
Oh, absolutely. And it was actually through COVID, and so it was a difficult time to even be getting around. And I was driving around in a, you know, 54 Holden. So, I mean, really we were filming in extraordinary places and in very small gatherings, meeting with people. But it just reminded me how much life and how much of our identity is outside of the cities.
Mm.
And, yeah, just it really made me want to get on the road again and tour.
In a 54 Holden, preferably.
With air conditioning, that would have been nice, but it didn't have it.
Well, speaking of country, your next pick is from an artist who makes beautiful country pop music.
Mm.
I love Lisa Miller. Mm. She's such an extraordinary voice. For anybody who doesn't know, tell me a little bit about Lisa before we get to the song that you've chosen.
Well, I can tell you about my relationship to Lisa. Again, when I first moved to Melbourne in my late teens, she was one of the first voices I heard, and I would go and see her whenever I could. She's, again, an extraordinary songwriter and an extraordinary interpreter as well.
Mm.
She's, I think, one of our best female songwriters, and I was just completely kind of in love with her in my early years. And then she's on the soundtrack to a film I made called Look Both Ways.
Just such a beautiful film.
Yeah.
I met you on Friday. We slept together on Saturday. Took me to meet your mother on Sunday, and then you can't start anything. That's the tightest little relationship I've ever had.
Beautiful film by Sarah Watt. Combined, it was you and William McInnes, and there was animation weaved into this story about, you know, basically how people are connected in really sort of strange and happenstance ways.
Yeah.
But just such a beautiful Australian film that was hugely successful, in 20 years ago in 2005. But it was so nice to be reminded of that film, because I remember how much I loved it when it first came out.
Yeah, I think it's one of the great Australian films, and it's one of those films that really stays with you. And I urge people, I mean, not for my performance, I mean, but for the filmmaking and for the soundtrack. The soundtrack's great, and this is one of the songs on it, and it's about grief, really, and how I think grief robs you of focus.
Only reading headlines and too long, avoiding deadlines. I think I paid that bill before.
You know, you can't function sometimes, and that's okay. And she just describes it in the most beautiful way. And I love the guitar in this song, and I love the way the violins come in, and I think I'm going through some things with my mum at the moment. She's 91 and she has dementia, and again, I feel a song like this, I can play it, and it gives me great comfort. For me, Lisa Miller's voice is one for the ages.
Falling feels like I'm falling. Why don't you just grab me? Make me see my senselessness and wake me before the 11th hour. Before the 11th hour.
I met Peter Dacent, who plays the piano in Play School, through Play School, but he is also Jonathan Schwartz's brother-in-law. And so we have this other close connection, and that's how we started making music on the side outside of Play School. He had these songs that he'd already written, you know, from the songs that make up most of I Like to Sing. And he said, do you want to come over and we can just, like, you know, have some fun, and we'll just record them, see what happens. And so we did, and we presented them to Play School to say, hey, would these be, you know, Play School songs? And they were like, not really. They're not quite in the right tone for Play School. So we went to ABC Music and we said, what do you think of these? Could we record an album? And they said, yeah, we'd love them. Please, please do. And that became I Like to Sing, which is 20 years old as of now.
did you ever imagine at that stage, or even before then, that you would have this whole massive chapter of your career as a children's performer and entertainer?
No. No, I didn't. I mean, I always wanted to be on Play School from the time when I was about 10. And, I mean, that makes sense, given that I was, you know, acting professionally since I was 7. I think that, you know, I realistically at the age of 10 thought, oh, I think I'd like to be on this show. I think I could do this. And then pounded my agent for auditions. And they're very hard to come by. And I managed to get one when I was in my mid to late 20s. And that was wonderful. And I loved it. But I didn't know what it would be like to perform for children. I just didn't know what that meant, really. And what I realised, having, you know, done a few shows when I Like to Sing came out, and Jackie Ozarski was actually on the gig, who's a very well-known and incredible bass player and musician in Sydney, and he was like, you got a crowd, man. And I did. I had like a crowd of kids up the front, and they were singing along to Watermelon.
Watermelon, watermelon, I love you, love watermelon.
And I was like, all right, okay. You know, Peter and I were like, wow, yeah, we've got a crowd. What I didn't realize was that half of that crowd are parents. It's not just a crowd of, you're not just performing for children or entertaining children, you're entertaining families. And it's the most wonderful, wholesome, I mean, beautiful thing. And the older I get, the older my kids get, the more joy I get out of just watching families being together and celebrating their love of music that they have played and engaged with at home, that they now do with it, with a wider group of families and other children. And yeah, it's been the greatest joy of my life.
I feel like you're also tipping a cap to people just like you who grew up in the scene, the live music scene, when you call your albums things like A Little Day Out.
Thank you.
Like, here's one for the kids and here's a little nod to the adults.
This is what we're doing now.
Yeah.
We're going out in the day. We're not going on the big day out anymore.
I mean, I don't have kids and I really like day gigs. Yeah, I say, give me a matinee, give me a 5 p.m. show.
Yes.
10 p.m.'s too late to come on stage. I'm sorry.
Totally.
I'm sorry. Well, I mean, you strike me as someone, and you know, we know each other outside of doing this Take Five, but you have this great curiosity and you seem to also have a great warmth which connects you to so many people from all walks of life. So I have no doubt that all of these little collaborations happen because you have that bright-eyed, yes, let's try something, let's go down that path. And someone who's been, you know, a big collaborator with you across a few different projects is the lead singer of your next choice, Tim Rogers, an incredible fella, a debonair gentleman, obviously an amazing songwriter, and you are taking us back to, in my opinion, his band's greatest album, Hi-Fi Way. Before we get to the song that you're choosing, because there's so many good songs on this record, when did you first fall in love with UMI?
Oh, just in the 90s music scene, just seeing him play in Sydney, and then also seeing him ride his bike through St Kilda with his cowboy boots on and his hair flowing behind him and a little cravat, you know. I mean, there's just nobody like him, and he's the most charming, funny, you know, wonderful person, but just an extraordinary songwriter, extraordinary and an extraordinary musician. But yeah, the UMI, just say Newtown 90s. Like, to me, it just says Sydney. That's why I chose it. Even though he's very Melbourne as well, it really evokes a particular time when I was, you know, in your 20s. It's great and everything, but it's also very miserable. And he can make you feel that misery in a very loving, kind of accepting sort of a way.
That's the thing. Like, this album came out the year I was in year 12, and it just captures that roller coaster of emotions, the bonds, the social bonds that you're forming, the feelings that you feel like completely isolated, and also just yearning for community, all of those things that you're figuring out, the sort of the knitting together of your life and who you're going to become is all captured in this record. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Had a scratch only you could itch.
Well, you've chosen Purple Sneakers, an all-time You're My song. Why this song? Why does it make it into your songbook?
Again, it's about place underneath the Glee Point Bridge, the purple sneakers and grey jeans. Like, I can just feel Sydney. I can just feel the time. Just every lyric in it is perfect. It just does feel like, you know, like in your 20s, like you're moving through images and feelings and people and places and moments, and it just, every line in this song seems to do that. And I was at a time in my life where I wasn't getting a lot of acting, and I wasn't getting enough from making music either, and I was working in a pizzeria in Newtown, and so I was in between who I was and what my life was and what my path was. And when I think about this song now, it all feels okay.
One of your first ever roles on the big screen was in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Welcome to another edition of Thunderdome!
I have to ask, did you ever spend time with, meet, or even be in the orbit of Tina Turner?
Yes, I did.
Oh, my God!
Yes, I did.
Let's just call her an honorary Australian for Oz Music Month. I mean, you know, she soundtracked the biggest rugby league campaign in history. But tell me the story. You and Tina Turner in a room. What happened?
Well, so I was 12 when I was in Mad Max 3 and became obsessed with Private Dancer, the album. Absolutely obsessed. Had scenes with her, but you couldn't really talk. You know, one was on a train and there was, you know, a huge wind machine blowing dust on us, and so you couldn't hear anything, and we were at one end of the carriage and she was at the other. And so, and then there was another time, I think, where she was on top of the hill at, you know, on the Thunderdome, and we were down the bottom. So we were never really in an actual scene, but I asked to meet her, and she had her own trailer, and I went in to her trailer. And I actually can't believe it happened now. She was sitting, there was a candle burning, and she was sitting with her legs crossed. So she must have been in a state of meditation or rest in between scenes, I'm assuming. And I remember it wasn't very long, and she just said hello, and I told her that I loved her album, and I think it was literally... that was it. And they just pulled me out. But I asked to meet her, and one of the ADs made it happen for me, which was lovely. And I think, I can't believe it, really.
That image must be seared onto your brain as well. Her just sitting there in like the lotus pose.
Yes.
She is in front of you.
It absolutely is. I mean, I was 12, so I can't remember much about it, but I do remember feeling her really strong, very calm presence. And when she died, we were doing Royal Flying Doctors, and Rob Collins, who is another actor in RFDS, brought a picture of her to set, and we were actually in Broken Hill, which of course is where they shot Mad Max 2 and some of Mad Max 3, I believe, and we put up a picture of her and we put the Nutbush on. And the whole crew got up and we danced the Nutbush. And I just, again, it's one of those moments where you look back and you think, wow, I can't actually believe that I'm here and that happened to me, you know?
But you asked, that's the thing, you asked, Justine.
Yeah, that's right.
You opened the door.
Yeah.
This is your life. Seriously. I'm learning this. This is great inspiration for anybody who's ever too scared. It's like, just ask, what do you got to lose?
That's right.
You could be standing in front of Tina Turner.
You might have to be 12. That probably that might help. But anyway, give it a go.
God, what a career, what a life. You have one more choice for us. It is a brilliant songwriter by the name of Angie McMahon. Maybe we'll get married. Maybe fall in love. Why did you choose Slow Mover?
Oh, I chose Slow Mover because I think I'm a bit of a slow mover.
I mean, I feel like your career would say no, but okay.
No, but it's not. From the inside, it doesn't feel like that. Yeah, I wrote a song, actually I co-wrote a song when I was probably about 18 called Late Bloomer, because I already felt like a late bloomer and I still feel like that. So I think, and I'm sort of embracing that, and I think Angie says it so much better. I mean, Angie's just so great at making you feel okay about everything. You know, it's okay, make mistakes.
Yeah.
Just do it. But this song, again, it just causes a little crack in my voice, chokes me up. And she's just, again, an amazing songwriter. Like Light, Dark, Light Again is just one of the best albums I've ever heard. From the beginning, right from the beginning, you got to listen to it from the beginning to the end. But I just love that line, "Friend, I am a slow, slow mover." You know, there's so many good lines in this song, and her voice is so mature and rich. And I've again all of these artists I've seen live, and that's what lives inside me, is their ability to be able to capture what they give you in recording in a live setting so we can all celebrate it together. And I saw her at the Opera House, and she was just wonderful.
Wonderful. She's extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Lyrics you could frame as well. Just an amazing artist. I'm so glad that we're finishing with Angie McMahon. And so stoked that you've been celebrating Australian song with your own Australian songbook. Justine, thank you so much for taking five.
Ah, thanks for having me, Zan.
Maybe we'll get married. Maybe fall in love. Could you make me fall asleep when you're holding me? I try setting me on fire. Try setting me on fire. Try setting me on. There's someone else, but I twist all of his words and he twists mine. So I'll have to let him go. We sometimes fit, but we always lie.
Angie McMahon, handpicked by Justine Clark for her Australian songbook. Oh, I love that, and I hope you did too. If you did, share this episode with a mate. You can follow Take 5 on your favourite streaming and podcast platforms, or just hit follow on the ABC Listen app and never miss an episode. Just search for Take 5 or find us on the Double J radio page. Next time, we're going to stay local with a brilliant songwriter. She's been away for a minute, but Stella Donnelly has just returned with a stunning new album. And next time, she's taking five with you.
Hang out with your best music mates every day on Double J. We get you through weekdays with fun morning chats and tracks with Michael Hing, Karen Lang with your lunch soundtrack, and Dylan Lewis drives you home from 3 p.m. Get your Friday started right with Zan Rowe for Take 5 and Desco, and Howler Tekefu kicks off the party Friday night from 5. Plus, Yumi Steins and Kaz Tran keep you company all weekend. Great music and great company every day on Double J. On digital radio in your car or anywhere on the Triple J and ABC Listen apps.